Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You've got a dead body, Inspector.
I may be able to help with that.
This winter, all your favourite detectives are streaming on BritBox. Don't miss exclusive new seasons of Death in Paradise.
There must be something we've missed.
Vera.
It wasn't an accident, was it, love?
Father Brown.
What did he look like?
And more. Once you start investigating, you won't want to stop.
We're done when I say we're done.
Stream your favourite detectives only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.
You're listening to the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway. This edition is published in the early hours of Thursday, the 1st of February. The bosses of Meta, TikTok and other tech giants face tough questioning at the US Senate.
I'm so tired of this. It's been 28 years, since the internet. We haven't passed any of these bills. And the reason they haven't passed is because of the power of your companies.
Mr. Zuckerberg, you and the companies before us, you have blood on your hands.
So, how did they respond? The UN says almost 8 million people have now been forced from their homes by fighting in Sudan. And a US judge rules that Elon Musk's record $56 billion pay package from Tesla was invalid. Also in the podcast, a major boost for the Danish economy as the firm behind the weight loss drug Wegovy posts a 51% increase in profits. And
came to my patio window and was indeed shocked to see a monkey going for my nuts. And I'm normally very protective of them. They've got contraptions and feeders there.
The search for a Japanese macaque on the loose in the Scottish Highlands. Democratic and Republican politicians in America don't agree on much, particularly in an election year. But they are united in their disgust at the behaviour of social media companies. And at a Senate hearing on Wednesday on child safety, they didn't hold back, firing questions at five tech bosses.
Mr. Zuckerberg, you and the companies before us, I know you don't mean it to be so, but you have blood on your hands. You have a product that's killing people. When we had cigarettes killing people, we did some about it, maybe not enough. You're going to talk about guns? We have the ATF. There's not a damn thing anybody can do about it. You can't be sued.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham taking aim at Meta boss Mark Zuckerberg. Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar was equally scathing.
I'm so tired of this. It's been 28 years since the internet. We haven't passed any of these bills. It's time to actually pass them. And the reason they haven't passed is because of the power of your company. So let's be really clear about that. What you say matters. Your words matter.
At one point, Mr. Zuckerberg was prompted to stand up and apologise to family members in the chamber, holding up pictures of children who'd suffered from online harm. In his statement, he admitted there was more to be done.
Keeping young people safe online has been a challenge since the internet began. We work closely with law enforcement to find bad actors and help bring them to justice. But the difficult reality is that no matter how much we invest or how effective our tools are, there's always more to learn and more improvements to make. But we remain ready to work with members of this committee, industry, and parents to make the internet safer for everyone.
Mr. Zuckerberg, who oversees Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, agreed to testify voluntarily, as did the CEO of TikTok. But the bosses of Snap, X, and Discord refused and had to be issued with subpoenas, the latter two in person by US marshals. I heard more about the hearing itself from our correspondent Nomia Iqbal on Capitol Hill.
There are so many issues. Essentially, what the Senate's been highlighting for many years is the continuing risk of child sexual abuse material on these sites. The Senate Judiciary Committee has supported many bills related to kids' digital safety. And so you've got social media platforms who are being increasingly scrutinised because there's growing evidence, Congress says, that suggests that excessive use and the proliferation of harmful content is damaging young people's mental health. In 2007, there were hearings held in Congress to address the rising reports of online child abuse. At the time, a law enforcement investigator said, I quote, they were overwhelmed, underfunded and drowning in the tidal wave of tragedy. And that year, tech companies reported 100,000 reports of illegal material. Last year, they reported 36.2 million. So that gives you a sense of just how much the problem has grown over the last decade or so.
Will anything concrete come out in this hearing in terms of perhaps laws or regulations?
Well, this is the problem. There's been many hearings like this. There have been bills that have been pushed. President Biden has talked about it in his last two State of the Union addresses, yet nothing really seems to come of it. I think one law was passed in the last decade, and that was a pretty narrow law related to trafficking online. What the Judiciary Committee wants is for these CEOs to commit to certain bills. The Kids Online Safety Act, another bill, Stop Child Sexual Abuse Material Act. And this chips away at tech companies' legal protections to allow victims to sue them. During the hearing, ex's Linda Giacchino said that she would endorse that. So that would be seen as a win for lawmakers. And they kept asking them throughout the hearing, will you commit to this? Will you commit to that? And many of them were not forthcoming with it.
Nomia Iqbal on Capitol Hill in Washington. And we will return to this story and in particular a focus on Facebook a little later in the podcast. In the 9 months since the army and its paramilitary rival, the Rapid Support Forces, began a power struggle in Sudan, nearly 8 million people, half of them children, have been forced from their homes, according to the UN Refugee Agency chief Filippo Grandi. He was speaking in Ethiopia, where some of the refugees have fled to. Others have gone to Chad and South Sudan. But most of the displaced people are still in Sudan, trying to avoid getting caught up in the fighting that's left 13,000 people dead. Our correspondent, Kalkedan Yabazal, told me what conditions are like in Sudan.
The humanitarian situation is very dire because of the security situation and because of the fluidity of the violence itself. Around 1.2 million people have fled the country altogether. They are in neighboring countries like Ethiopia, like Chad and Egypt. But these countries have their own problems. Chad is a very poor country, for example, and Ethiopia has its own problems with ongoing conflicts, which means people are not receiving sufficient aid. But the most pressing issue right now is the escalation of the fighting. If the fighting and the violence continues to rage as it does now, it means more people are going to be pushed out of their homes and the situation is going to worsen.
So is any aid getting through?
Aid is getting through, but it's not sufficient. Some of the medical facilities are not operating fully because there is violence in Khartoum and Western Darfur. Humanitarian agencies in those areas are not operating up to scale. In addition to that, the UN is complaining that there is significant gap in funding. They have to compete for donors as there are other pressing crises across the world.
Now, there have been countless attempts at forging a ceasefire in Sudan. Where are we with the latest efforts to end the fighting?
There isn't that much hope as things stand. There have been efforts by the US and the Saudi governments, by the African Union and by the regional bloc of East African countries. But none of these efforts have succeeded to bring the two warring parties together to find a solution. What we are hearing is the escalation of the fighting and the expansion of it to areas that had previously been relatively calm. Also, the head of the Sudanese army, General Al-Burhan, has reportedly ordered a large-scale offensive against positions held by the RSF. All this suggests that the fighting is escalating rather than de-escalating.
Kalkedan Yabaltal in Ethiopia talking to me about events in Sudan. On Sunday, at least two ministers from the Israeli government attended a controversial meeting in Jerusalem calling for Jewish settlements to be re-established in Gaza. The US, Germany and France all condemned the idea, with the White House criticising what it called incendiary and irresponsible rhetoric. The move has long been championed by far-right groups in Israel, but it's been given renewed attention following the Hamas attacks of the 7th of October. Many Palestinians believe Israel's ultimate aim is to force them out of the Gaza Strip altogether. Daniela Weiss is a leading figure in the settler movement and was at the conference. She spoke to Rebecca Kesby.
after the 7th of October, history changed. Hamas will not stay. Supporters of Hamas will not stay. And those who want to live normally will not live in Gaza, but in other free countries of the world.
Why should they leave Gaza? Is their home?
Because they committed something that is against all human normal behavior.
Well, the civilians didn't, did they? They're just civilians.
I know you don't mean what you say. You say it because some people use this expression. 80% of the population in Gaza support Hamas.
I'm not sure that we do have the statistics on that. What we do know is that a very large percentage of the population are children. Roughly 50% of the population of Gaza is under the age of 18. So there's a very large number of civilians who do not support Hamas. Yeah. What we do know is that they're non-combatants. Do you want to push them out forcibly?
We'll encourage them. One of the things that are necessary is prevent any humanitarian help until we get the last of the hostages.
To a lot of people, including millions of Jewish people around the world, what that sounds like is using humanitarian aid as a weapon of war, possibly using starvation as a weapon of war. And it certainly sounds very like ethnic cleansing.
You know what I have in my mind? 136 Jews that are part of my Jewish nation. And the normal thing for every nation is to think first of the members who are suffering. We want to see them free. And if for that people of the enemy die, this is the normal behavior of the world.
Around 20% of Israeli citizens are Arabs, most of them being Muslim. Are you happy for them to stay Israeli?
I prefer that they will be more loyal to the state of Israel. But Ben-Gurion, the founder of the state of Israel, gave equal rights, so it stays. In spite of the fact that Arab members of Knesset who represent the Arab population are very much not loyal to the state of Israel. But this is a fact of history that right. I'm not speaking about changing.
Many Jewish people, many Israelis listening to you will find your views abhorrent. And this is against government policy anyway, what you're suggesting.
This is exactly our role, to promote an idea, even if it doesn't go hand in hand with the current policy. But I can assure you and assure the listeners, our attitude will grow. And finally, this will be the situation in Gaza. Gaza now under Hamas is hell, and the Jews will turn it into paradise on earth.
Daniela Weiss talking to Rebecca Kesby. Shares in Tesla have fallen after a judge in the US cancelled a record-breaking pay deal awarded to its founder, Elon Musk. The package, worth just under $56 billion, helped make Mr. Musk the richest man in the world when it was announced in 2018. A shareholder complained that Mr. Musk had been overpaid and brought the legal action, despite owning just 9 shares. Here's our business editor, Simon Jack.
In 2018, nearly 80% of Tesla shareholders approved a plan to award Elon Musk options or the right to buy over 300 million shares in the company at a knockdown price. If the share price rocketed, those rights would rocket in value too, to over $55 billion. And it did. Tesla shares rose nearly 20-fold at one point, making Elon Musk the richest person in the world. But Richard Tornetta challenged the deal in a court in the state of Delaware, where Tesla is legally registered, arguing it was unfair to other shareholders, well beyond what was needed to incentivize Mr. Musk, and granted by directors in awe of him. The Delaware judge agreed and yesterday nullified the deal. Elon Musk posted on X, formerly Twitter, which he also controls, "Never incorporate your company in the state of Delaware." He now owns 13% of Tesla, down from over 20, and short of the 25% he would like to feel in control of the company. The decision can and probably will be appealed once legal fees so far have been settled, so the biggest pay row in history may have further to run.
Our business editor, Simon Jack. Now to an extraordinary story about 3 siblings who were dumped by their biological parents in small towns in Ireland in the 1960s. All were adopted, had good lives, and have been reunited through DNA testing. But the story of Helen Ward, David McBride, and John Dowling doesn't end there. And they're hoping that listeners will be able to help them. All 3 are what are known as foundlings. Helen started by explaining what that means to Nuala McGovern.
Foundling is something that has been found or someone that has been found. In my case, it was myself as a baby found, abandoned back in 1968.
And David?
I was found in a place called Dunmurry, just about 3 miles from Belfast. I was found in a car. I was well fed, well taken care of, and I was found by a doctor's wife.
And to you, John?
I was found in the 2nd of May in Drogheda in 1965 in a phone box, well wrapped up with a warm bottle of milk. I was found by two men.
Helen, take us through how you have met your brother David and your brother John.
In 2018, I put my DNA up onto one of the sites. And in 2019, I got a call from long lost families to say I had connected with a full sibling who was also searching.
This is a television programme that reunites family members that perhaps were adopted and had lost touch with one another but want to find one another.
That's right. Shortly after that, we were asked to come back to do another little bit of filming, and we were told that we had another full sibling, and that was our brother John.
David, what was that like to find out that you had a sibling?
Quite surreal, but it was one of the most fantastic feelings. It's as if we had known each other all our lives. Helen came into the room, there was TV cameras rolling, but we just ignored them and we sat there well over 2 hours just talking.
John, so where do you come into the picture?
It's funny, my daughter in Australia saw a programme of David and Helen, and she noticed that there were similarities between David and myself. I watched it the next night, and then Donna rang me to know would I do a DNA test. I did the DNA test at the start of 21. By Easter, I knew that David and Helen were full siblings of mine.
Your daughter is watching on television down in Australia, and just by physical similarities, she's like, he's like Dad?
Yeah, she said that David actually walked a bit like Dad, and David's hands were like my hands. And she was dead right. It was amazing.
Our mother was a Catholic. Our father was a Protestant. That in itself, getting together, was a taboo in Ireland. Then our mother and father had an affair out of wedlock. She fell pregnant to a married man. She hid all the three taboos that Irish culture hated. We may not have had any life at all. That may have been the best decision made to place us somewhere where we could be found.
But that is not where this extraordinary story ends.
In September 2022, it was made aware to me that there was another baby discovered in similar circumstances to us. They were found in Newry in 1963. It was a little boy, and I think he was named Michael. Of course, because of the similarities, it alerted the three of us to say, perhaps there is a fourth. So we were all found in a bag, very well dressed. We were all very well looked after at birth.
I think this person, if they are listening, that they should get in contact with us, because it would be a shame for this person not to get in contact with us and do a DNA test and maybe find out that he may be part of our family, which is a joyous occasion.
I have to say, it's a really deep emotional journey, which requires a lot of thought. But for me to have and achieved this amount of happiness, it's absolutely incredible.
Helen Ward, David McBride and John Dowling talking to Nuala McGovern. And the address to contact them is family3.info@gmail.com. Family3 with the number 3.info@gmail.com. And still to come on the Global News podcast.
The world is burning around us, Elmo.
Elmo, we are tired.
The extraordinary outpouring of emotion on social media prompted by a simple question from a TV puppet. Novo Nordisk, the Danish pharmaceutical firm behind the popular obesity and diabetes jabs Wegovy and Ozempic, has reported record profits driven by surging sales. The firm said net profits had risen over 50% in 2023 to more than $12 billion. From Copenhagen, here's Adrienne Murray.
Compared to Danish firms Lego or Carlsberg, Novo Nordisk is hardly a household name. Yet it's now Europe's most valuable company, with more than $500 billion. Its rapid growth has been driven by booming sales of the blockbuster medications Wegovy and Ozempic. Wegovy is a weekly weight loss injection intended for people who are severely overweight, while Ozempic is a type 2 diabetes treatment made from the same ingredient. Both drugs have flown off pharmacy shelves after social media buzz and reports of famous celebrities using the drugs have helped fuel their popularity. Sales of Wegovy alone increased fivefold over 2023. However, the Denmark-based drug maker has struggled to meet demand and said it was boosting supplies of Wegovy to tackle the shortages. Novo Nordisk Chief Financial Officer Carsten Munk-Knudsen told the BBC that the firm is investing billions of dollars to ramp up production.
I don't think we'll be able to meet demand anytime soon. We're only serving, call it, to the tune of 1 million patients on an annualized basis out of more than 800 million people with obesity globally. And we're investing significantly to scale to that.
Wegovy is now sold in 6 countries. Most recently, it entered the UK and will launch in Japan this month. It's the first to market of a new generation of medications that some predict will revolutionise the weight loss industry. American rival Eli Lilly has produced the drugs Mounjaro and Zepbound, while other large manufacturers are expected to follow. However, the boom in weight loss drugs has also sparked sharp debate over their affordability and impact on society.
Adrian Murray in Copenhagen. Returning to our top story, the US Senate Judiciary Committee's questioning of some of the world's biggest tech companies. Politicians from both parties said firms with hundreds of millions of young users were not doing enough to safeguard children from online exploitation. Mark Zuckerberg said his firm Meta had a robust system in place to protect young people online.
Being a parent is one of the hardest jobs in the world. Technology gives us new ways to communicate with our kids and feel connected to their lives, but it can also make parenting more complicated. And it's important to me that our services are positive for everyone who uses them. We are on the side of parents everywhere working hard to raise their kids. Over the last 8 years, we've built more than 30 different tools, resources, and features that parents can set time limits for their teens using our apps, see who they're following, or if they report someone for bullying.
Mr. Zuckerberg's appearance in the Senate came almost 20 years after Facebook went live for the first time in his Harvard University room. The firm has since grown into a trillion-dollar enterprise incorporating WhatsApp and Instagram. And while Mr. Zuckerberg has been increasingly criticised for failing to adequately safeguard users from harm, that hasn't stopped his empire from growing even bigger. Stephen Levy, editor-at-large of Wired and author of Facebook, The Inside Story, takes a look back at how it all began.
There's a video of Mark Zuckerberg where his father had gotten his acceptance letter to Harvard and sprung the news on him while Mark was doing something on a computer.
What does it say?
Put it away for a second.
I can't see it.
He seems a lot more interested in playing with a computer.
Yay, I got accepted.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
All right.
What excites him? He's very blasé about that. Really, he's almost like annoyed being pulled away from a video game while his dad tells him he's going to Harvard.
And now there's a new form of cyber matchmaking, college networking websites. Is this perhaps the next big thing?
This culminated in February 2004, came out with something that he called Facebook, which was a digital version of the physical yearbook kind of thing. It took off like a rocket ship.
How big do you think your product or your service is?
When we first launched, we were hoping for, you know, maybe 400, 500 people. And now we're at 100,000 people. So who knows where we're going next?
He was lucky enough to have launched it in an environment where people wanted to know more about their fellow students. When he built that up, he had learned a lot about what people wanted to see. And when he threw it out there with the news feed, they were able to populate the news feed with the kinds of things that would engage people. I believe it was 2009, this deal with Spotify that they made. And I remember, which was lavish party, and they had the Killers and Snoop Dogg, and Mark was standing on a table shrieking the words of Snoop Dogg lyrics. It was pretty wild. Thinking around 2012, he had to deal with the crisis of the world was moving to mobile technology.
And we are calling it iPhone.
That wasn't what Facebook was built for, so we had to almost restart the company from a technological sense and also figure out how the ad model would work with mobile. And he did that, but not in time to prevent somewhat of a disaster when the company went public. But soon after that, they recovered really nicely. That was also the year they bought Instagram, that turned out very well for Facebook.
It is my high honor to introduce to you the president-elect of the United States,
of America, Donald Trump.
2016, the election, was a huge inflection point for Facebook. They had been cited for privacy violations before, and some of the other products caused problems. But they managed to skate all by that until the day after the 2016 election, when Donald Trump was elected, and a lot of people all of a sudden turned to Facebook and said, wait a minute, didn't you help make this happen? And then people started to focus more closely on the dark side of Facebook.
My goal was never really to make Facebook cool. I am not a cool person. The services that we aspire to be like in the world are kind of these basic things that you can rely on and that you'd probably be pretty upset if they went away, but you're not like sitting around celebrating all day long.
They shift in name to the metaverse, and now AI is the current model, where in terms of Mark's interests, the attention he's paying is to the future Meta Facebook, whereas it still is a social media company that gets virtually all their revenues and certainly all their profits from social media. Facebook was the tool by which we became social on the internet, and it connected a lot of people and continues to, in a lot of ways, in a positive way, but also in some troubling ways. And I think we're still grappling with the good and bad of social media, like we're grappling with the good and bad of artificial intelligence and every advance of technology.
Stephen Levy on the 20th anniversary of Facebook. At the peak of the Roman Empire, its army was protecting and policing a quarter of the world's then population. Military bases and family accommodation could be found everywhere from the Middle East and North Africa to Britain. And it will all feature in a new exhibition called Legion at the British Museum here in London. Charlotte Higgins is the author of Under Another Sky, Journeys in Roman Britain. Michelle Hussain asked her if there was much of a Roman legacy left in Britain.
Huge and impressive amounts, Michelle. And there's a beautiful selection in the Legion exhibition. There is a remarkable site called Vindolanda in which extraordinary items were preserved in the wet sod of Northumberland. Hobnail boots and sandals and shoes belonging to not just Roman men, but Roman women. And an incredible treasury of written material that miraculously survived. And that includes, I find ineffably touching, a letter from one Roman military wife to another inviting her to a birthday party, which includes the earliest known handwriting from a woman in anywhere in the Roman Empire. That's from the first century AD. So Britain is incredibly rich with material, and it shows a very rounded picture. And I think that the exhibition does a great job of that. That this is a kind of killing machine, the Roman army, and the kind of artillery, the technology, as you can sort of see it as the precursors of the T-80s that are rolling through Ukraine at the moment. But also these are sort of ordinary lives, families, women, children, enslaved people, the whole sort of community in the round.
And did the Roman army recruit from amongst the indigenous population? So the, I don't know, we can call them the Britons of that time. Could they end up in the ranks?
Definitely. Part of the way the Roman Empire operated, its sort of modus operandi was subdue the natives, enroll the elites into the function of the administration of the empire and recruit locally. I mean, that's how the whole thing kept going, which means that in Britain, for example, you get this, one could say, multicultural population of soldiers and their dependents. You know, there were people from Syria, from Iraq, from Spain, the Netherlands, from Germany, living here in Britain, which is an interesting disruption to maybe some of our received ideas about the nature of Britain and its ethnic makeup.
Charlotte Higgins talking to Michelle Hussain. In many parts of the world, it would be no surprise to see a monkey wandering about, but not in the Highlands of Scotland. A Japanese macaque remains on the loose in a remote village after escaping from a wildlife park at the weekend. Drones spotted the monkey roaming the Scottish Highlands before it ended up in the village of Kincraig. There have been several sightings, including one just 300 metres from the park's entrance. Carl Nagel and his partner Tina Salzberg couldn't believe it when they saw the creature in their backyard on Sunday morning.
No way!
This is
insane. Your bird feed.
He's going to trash that feeder.
Who cares? So awesome.
They spoke to Sarah Montague about that moment.
I was awoken by a call from my daughter saying, there's a monkey on your street, Dad, because it had been seen in a local Facebook group. post in a garden across the street. And I was like, what are the chances? Came to my patio window and was indeed shocked to see a monkey going for my nuts. And I'm normally very protective of them. They've got kind of all sorts of contraptions and feeders there that the squirrels.
These are nuts for the squirrels.
Into, but he was we should make himself. Clear. Yes, I'm sorry. I should have made that clear. And he was there feeding on bits that had fallen out and then got up onto the fence and started to have a real crack at one of them. Just the incongruity of seeing a Japanese snow monkey in a Scottish garden seems to have captured a few people's imaginations.
Did you feel like going out to see the monkey?
No.
Well, I did. I was like, let's go out there. I wanted to open the back door. Carl started freaking out a little bit and he was like, honey, don't open the door. Remember what happened to me 30 years ago in Thailand when I was attacked by a rabid monkey. It doesn't look so rabid, but okay, I'll keep the door shut.
This is Sunday morning.
It's now Wednesday, yeah.
So what's the information about where he is now?
So there's been something of a widespread monkey hunt going on in the village for the whole time. As far as we know, he was spent most of his time hunkered down at the north end of the village where they've had all these drones up trying to keep sight of him. A few of the residents did see him, I think, as he made his way there on Sunday through their gardens. But last I heard, he was making his way back towards the park, which is everybody's hope because they're social. He'll want to be back with his troop. There's a food issue, I guess, as well. The weather, whilst they're built for it, is not terribly hospitable up here at the moment. It's blowing a hoolie out there and it's quite cold. So maybe he's like, enough, game over.
Has it made you nervous to go out?
No. If anything, I think every time we've gone out anywhere in the car or walking in the last few days, you're convinced you're going to see him again.
There's lots of wildlife up here, whether it's a pheasant or a red squirrel or whatever. You convince yourself that the monkey has just run by. And Carl thinks very much that he's a kindred spirit with this monkey. So it's hoping the monkey will come back.
Tina Salzberg and Carl Nagel talking to Sarah Montague. Finally, to coin a phrase, how is everybody doing? Well, the answer, it seems, is not great. When Elmo, the Muppet from the children's TV show Sesame Street, took to X or Twitter to ask people how they were, thousands replied, including celebrities and even the US president. People told stories of distress and anguish at the state of the world or their personal lives. But it also led to the sharing of an important mental health message. Sean Wales takes up the story.
Beloved children's TV character Elmo loves spreading messages of positivity. But a simple question posed to Elmo's followers on X seems to have triggered a collective internet-based breakdown. The Sesame Street star asked people how they were doing, and while the replies weren't all that uplifting.
Elmo, I'm suffering from existential dread over here.
The world is burning around us, Elmo.
Elmo, we are tired.
In the backdrop of ongoing global conflicts and midwinter blues for many in the Northern Hemisphere, the post gathered more than 12,000 replies. Celebrities such as actress Rachel Zegler joined in, saying she was resisting the urge to tell Elmo that I am kind of sad.
Oh, Elmo sad, green frog not play with Elmo.
Elmo isn't immune to the ups and downs of everyday life.
Elmo very sad.
But after reaching over 176 million people, the Muppet had a message of encouragement for those doing it tough. With the hashtag emotional wellbeing, Elmo posted another message. It read, ask a friend how they are doing. Elmo loves you. A sentiment shared by the US President Joe Biden, who reposted with this message. Offer our help to a neighbour in need. And above all else, ask for help when we need it.
Happy, happy, dance, dance.
Hopefully by encouraging people to look after one another, Elmo will have a few more doing their own little happy dance.
Elmo loves you. Happy, happy dance, dance. Happy, happy dance, dance. When we learn something new, we
Elmo, ending that report by Sean Wales. That's all from us for now, but the Global News podcast will be back very soon. This edition was mixed by Chris Kouzaris and produced by Emma Joseph. Our editor is Karen Martin. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.
There's something magical about unboxing.
When you unbox BritBox, you uncover a world of British entertainment. Stream the UK's most brilliant series, including new and upcoming seasons of Shetland, Father Brown, and Death in Paradise. Plus new originals like Payback, Irvine Welsh's Crime, and Archie, the story of Hollywood's greatest leading man, Cary Grant. Unbox BritBox and escape to the best of British TV. Stream with a free trial at BritBox.com.